Got something to say about the game? Call 713-439-1560 and tell Nuno he lives with this crap.
Welcome back to Game Time. We're here at the bus. David Nuno, Sean Pendergast here, and we're joined by a very, very special guest. Before I get to Mr. Larry Durka, I want to give the opportunity to you gamers to come to the Astros game tonight, today, this afternoon. First gamer who comes up to KJ here, standing next to the booth, wearing an
someone coming in for the game, right? Not someone who's already here at the bar.
Somebody coming in.
Yeah.
If you're on 59, you're on 45, you want to go to the game. Vinny Vagadonas, the original, the real Vinny, has offered two tickets
from Cleveland. Probably knows the DeBartolos.
You got to come here to the bus across the street from Minute Maid Park. Go up to KJ. You have to be wearing Astros gear, and you have to tell us 1560 the game rocks.
And you have to know who KJ is. That's a pretty good way to know if they're a 1560 the gamer.
If you know KJ,
he's the one who looks like Jerome Bettis. You have to know who Jerome Bettis is too.
But right now, we are very privileged to be joined by Larry Durker. We all know his story. Pitched for the Astros, was a manager, broadcaster. He's here today joining us. Mr. Durker, thank you so much for joining us.
All right. It's nice to be with you guys.
It's a pleasure. Let's start things off with the start the Astros have had. It's not the start I think people expected. We knew that they were going to struggle a little bit from the pitching side, but not Roy Oswalt.
No. Well, baseball will always give you something you don't expect, and that's certainly something that is a surprise. I mean, he probably hasn't had three bad starts in a row in his entire career. But put it in perspective, I had a year going into a All-Star break. My last start was against the Mets. I had 9 wins. I thought, well, I'll beat the Mets. And then I got a pretty good shot at 20. Well, I lost to the Mets. And then came back from All-Star break, and I lost again. I get hit hard 3 or 4 times in a row, and I finally pitch a good game, and we get shut out. And I get hit hard again, and then I pitch a good game, and I leave after 7. It's 2-2 or something like that. No decision. I end up going 2 months and probably 12 or 13 starts without a win. At the end of the year, I'm 15-9. So put it in perspective.
Right.
Yeah.
Take me inside the mind of first a manager and also the mind of a pitcher after you've had 3 rough starts. So, I mean, what is right now you think Cecil Cooper's thinking? Is he really worried about his ace, or is he just going to give us some more time?
He's worried. I mean, you can't really react to anything except what's happening in the here and now. And right now he's been pitching so poorly and been hit so hard that you can't help but be worried. But at the same time, if you're Roy Oswalt, you have to say, hey, you know, what I've done hasn't been an accident, unless he has a sore arm that we don't know about. He's probably going to come around and pitch the way we're used to him pitching. And the big thing that you have to try to do is to force yourself to have confidence.
Right.
And it's hard to force confidence, but if you're on the mound and you're not sure which pitch you want to throw, it's probably you're indecisive because you haven't been successful and you're debating everything in your mind and you're overthinking everything, and that can lead to problems. You know how assertive he is when he's pitching well, and you can almost read his body language the last couple of starts and say, this isn't the same confident guy that we're used to seeing. But he's got to find a way to get that confidence. Sometimes it's nothing more than an accident. You know, you throw 3 innings and maybe they hit some balls hard, but they hit them right to somebody. But now you're on a roll and you got a lead, and it seems like as fast as it can leave you, it can come right back with one game.
Larry, of course, a lot of teams, their aces have catchers that they like throwing to. And, of course, on opening day, Roy, in his first 2 starts, throwing to Brad Ausmus. This last start out with the off day right before, it just was logical that J.R. Tolles would be in there catching, and he's the guy the Astros are going to want catching 100-some-odd games this year. In general, how much stock do you put in the guy that you're throwing to behind the plate affecting performance at all?
Well, it shouldn't affect performance, but it can. Because every sport has a psychological aspect, and when you have a guy you're comfortable with, that improves your outlook. But with the guy that's been in the league as long as Roy and had the success he's had, he should know what he wants to throw. And the only thing the catcher should be required to do is frame the pitches,
right,
stop the balls that are in the dirt, make good throws, do the physical part of the job. Roy should be able to do the mental part of it. But more and more I found when I managed that the pitchers depend on the catcher. And when you have a guy like Ausmus, everybody wants to pitch to him. And that can be a little bit of a psychological problem for the team in general, and certainly a challenge for the manager, and something that kind of hangs over the young catcher because he knows that the pitchers would like to pitch to Brad. So, I mean, it's a little issue, but it shouldn't be anything more than a little issue.
Yeah. Our guest is Larry Durker here on 1560 The Game. We're at the bus. Come say hello. We're giving you a chance for two tickets. We're a 1560 The Game shirt. No, excuse me. We're an Astros shirt.
Astros gear.
And tell KJ that the 1560 The Game rocks. All you got to do. Pretty simple.
All you got to do.
Two great tickets.
Yep.
Let me ask you about the rest of the pitching staff. Before the season, you know, that was a big concern. Valverde seems to be a little bit of a concern as a closer, but I'd say from the starting rotation, 2 through 5 has been okay.
Yeah, it's been all right. But, you know, again, we're just 2 weeks into the season, and what I think a lot of people anticipated going into the year is that this would be a pitching staff that would be bullpen-driven. And what you're hoping will happen, if that turns out to be the case in the long run, is that you've got enough other elements, like the Cardinals did in the 80s and the Big Red Machine in the 70s, where the starting rotation was mediocre, but the bullpen was strong, and all other aspects of the team were strong, and they won championships that way.
Astros get out to an early lead last night, they haven't been able to do that very much at all this year. They jump out to that 5-0 lead. Brandon Backe doesn't have his best stuff. On the mound, you're a pitcher. The team jumps out to an early 5-run lead like that. How much pressure does it take off of you? Or as a starting pitcher, do most pitchers just sit there and try and focus frame to frame, and they're really not even focused on what the other team's doing?
I think probably everybody has their own thinking process. And
I guess for you,
for me, it would put more pressure on, because I'd say, okay, now here we have the lead. I can't blow it.
Yeah.
You know, we really need a strong starting performance. We need a starter in the win column. We need to build some momentum for that little team within a team, the starting rotation. And here I am with the lead, and it's my job to get this thing started. And I think that could increase the pressure. He didn't obviously have good control yesterday. And if you watch the game, you see that he was actually hit pretty hard to go along with those outs. The first two hitters drove the ball to the wall, and both balls were caught. There were a lot of hard-hit balls that were caught. But one thing you can take away from that is, if you're not playing well, and the Astros haven't been, it seems like every break goes against you, whether it's an error, whether it's a broken bat hit, or whether it's an umpire's call. It seems like you're snake bit. And now you have a game where you walk a bunch of guys that get hit hard and the other team doesn't score, and you say, well, maybe, you know, some breaks are going to start to go our way.
Let me ask you, Larry Durker, our guest here on 1560 The Game, about leadership. Biggio obviously gone. This is a completely different team when you look at the roster makeup this year than last year. Who do you think, and I know you didn't manage a lot of these guys, but who do you think could be that leader? Could it be Miguel Tejada, who's kind of been known to be a guy who leads clubhouses?
Well, I think that's overrated. You know, I think there are certain players that have those qualities. Probably Brad Ausmus with the Astros more than anyone, but it's kind of hard for a guy that's not playing every day, because part of leadership is leading by example, what you do on the field. But, you know, Joe Morgan came back to us after he was with the Reds, had a players-only meeting in September of 1980, and the team got hot and won a championship, and they said, Joe Morgan's a great leader. Well, certain guys are, because they communicate well, and they know when it's time to get everybody together and sort of regroup and commit to moving forward with confidence. And if you have a guy like that, it's a great asset. But if you don't have a guy like that and you have a good team, you still win.
Hunter Pence struggling out of the gate this year after having such a good rookie year last year. Talk about handling a young player like that, and does it vary from player to player, or in general, young players, do you have to kind of just, with a guy like Hunter Pence, as talented as he is, just sort of ride this thing out and hope that he's going to come around?
Well, I think that's about all you can do. I mean, you have to play him. His tools are extraordinary, and his performance last year was very good over a long period of time, so you assume he's going to do the things he did last year this year. But on the other hand, you know, there is the correction factor, and that's why people talk about a sophomore jinx. The league gets a good scouting report on you. As you notice, he's struggling. They're throwing him a lot of breaking balls out of the strike zone, and he's swinging at them. So, you know, what he's got to do is figure out how to stop swinging at those pitches, and it's easy to say and hard to do.
Does it really take the league? I mean, is that something that takes a whole year to figure out, that we got to throw breaking balls to Hunter Pence? I mean, what? But
no.
Because he hit well throughout the year last year, and now all of a sudden this year, everybody's talking about his inability or his proclivity to swing at the breaking balls.
Well, he did that last year too.
Yeah.
what he lived on was the mistake.
Yeah.
And when, let's say, the book on him is throwing breaking balls out of the strike zone and everybody starts doing that.
They're doing it better this year.
The other night, you know, they threw one that was right down the middle, and he hit a double to left center.
Right.
So, you know, I think, again, it gets to be that confidence and momentum factor. He goes through three or four days in a row where he's swinging pretty well and the pitchers are making a bunch of mistakes, and he gets a lot of hits, and then he starts to see the ball a little better, maybe lays off some of those breaking balls. And you know, one of the things that's always amused me is in spring training, the hitters would say, you know, I'm just trying to get my timing. Once I get my timing down, I'll be all right.
Right.
And I'm thinking, yeah, sure. Well, you get your timing down, you'll be all right for a while, and then you'll lose your timing again during the season, and you'll get it back again during the season, and you'll lose it again and get it back. You're never going to get your timing and keep it all year.
Right.
Let me ask you about the top of the lineup. Michael Bourne, who is not hitting the ball, but when he does get on base, he's definitely making pitchers think twice.
Right. You know, I think at least the way I saw that deal, that they're trying to get somebody back that could do the things that Willie Taveras could do, and I think Mike will be able to do it. But Willie has hit in the 280, 290 range for two or three years in the major leagues, and Michael Bourne has only had 150 major league at-bats or something like that, so it's hard to project him doing those same things until he starts doing them. You know, I mean, there's nothing like repetitions, and I wouldn't panic at all. I mean, he's covering ground in the outfield. He throws pretty well. He steals a base just about any time he gets a chance. Just a matter of getting on base more. And as the season goes along, the Astros will find out if he can get on base enough to be a really plus in the lineup as a leadoff man. And there's no other way. It's just like with Hunter Pence. You've got to ride it out, and you believe in him, and you believe he's going to turn it around, and maybe you will or maybe you won't. But if he gets on base, he's a guy that's going to certainly divide the attention of every pitcher in the league, because you're so worried about holding him on base, you might make a mistake to the next guy.
Yeah, and he's a guy, too, Larry, in this ballpark with that spacious center field. Michael Bourne affects games other ways, too, even when he's not hitting.
It's so important. Yeah. I mean, when I was managing and we had Richard Hidalgo playing out there, you know, he could cover it pretty well in the Astrodome, but with that extra 30, 40 feet behind you, he was challenged in this ballpark. And then we had Lance out there for a while. He wasn't fast enough. They tried Chris Burke. He wasn't fast enough.
Craig was out there for a while.
Think about this. If a guy has great speed and he runs into the gap and catches the ball in the web of his glove, a guy without great speed, even if he has a good jump and runs in the perfect route straight to the ball, and he misses it by a foot, it's not an out. Instead, it's a double and maybe a triple.
In this park, so, maybe a triple,
know,
right.
The importance of getting balls in the outfield can't be underestimated.
Yeah.
I mean, because it changes extra base hits into outs.
Right.
Hey, Larry, let me ask you your initial thoughts on Miguel Tejada on the field, his defense. I think we know what he can do offensively, but have you been impressed with his range of motion?
I have been, but, you know, it's one of those things that you have to watch for a while, because what I had heard, you know, scouting report, the grapevine, that sort of thing, is that he didn't cover much ground and he was a below average fielding shortstop. What I've seen with my own eyes, he looks like he's perfectly adequate, and in some cases he's been better than that so far. But this, again, it's just 2 weeks, so is he going to be what the scouts have told me that he is, or is he going to be like this all year? If he is, they have no defensive problem, and if he doesn't get suspended, they don't have a shortstop problem, as long as he stays healthy.
Right.
Because he's going to give you some offense that you weren't getting out of that position the last few years, really ever, in this club's history. So, you know, that could be a tremendous asset. If you've got a guy that can play the defense and be a big run producer, and he's playing a defensive position like catcher, short, or center field, you've got some. So, I mean, if Bourne can get on, if Toles hits anywhere near like he did in September, if Tejada can play a good enough defense and stay healthy, all of a sudden you've got offensive contributions coming from positions where a lot of teams don't have much offense.
Hey, the catcher, the Cardinals game the other night when they hit the four home runs, when was the last time an Astros, if you don't know the answer to this, I don't know who would, but I don't know when the last time the Astros had a catcher and a shortstop hit a home run in the same game. You know, and that happened the other night with Tejada and Toles against the Cardinals. I mean, you're right. You get contributions from normally non-power positions. That's a huge advantage. All right, I'm going to ask you this question, Larry. Given your pitching career and your managing career here in Houston, if you don't know the answer, I don't think anybody's going to know the answer, because we get asked it all the time. Wandy Rodriguez, starting pitcher today. He's a world beater at home, and then on the road, we just don't know what happens. Do you have any sort of answer as to why there's good Wandy and evil Wandy?
Well, you know, I mean, it's like somebody told me about golf one time. The most important distance in golf is 6 inches.
You know,
the
right
distance between your two ears.
Yeah, right.
and so, you know, with Brad Lidge, you know, I mean, it wasn't his stuff.
Yeah, right.
Wandy, it's not his stuff. As we said, you know, Brandon went out there yesterday and they hit line drives right at people and they hit balls up against the wall that were caught. He got a little bit lucky and he got a win, and maybe he builds a little confidence from that and carries it with him into the next start. With Wandy, I think it's the same thing. His stuff should be the same on the road as at home.
Right.
So, you know, the thing is, get out there one time on the road and either pitch really well or get lucky and get a positive result, and then maybe do it the next time and put that behind you. But obviously, Brad Lidge was never able to quite put that all behind him, and Wandy might not either. I mean, it's one of those deals. Who else are you going to put on the mound?
That's right.
You can't start him at home and not on the road.
Right.
So you just have to work with him and talk to him. I think Woody Williams helped him a lot last year, and he actually did pitch a few good games on the road toward the end of last year. I think he can do it. You know, it's all a matter with Wandy of keeping his fastball out of the extra base hitting zone, which is up and out over the plate. If he keeps his fastball to right-handers down and away and with his curveball and his ability to come inside, he's got a little deception. He's got a fly ball fastball, though, so he's got to keep his fastball out of the zone where they're going to hit those fly balls a long distance, and that means don't throw it up and away to right-handed hitters.
Larry Durker, our guest here on 15-6 of the game. I got a very broad question for you. You take it any way you want to take it. Best moment as an Astro, it could be as a manager, as a pitcher.
Really, for me, I think personally and also for the team, was the last regular season game in the Astrodome, 1999. We had to win that game to win our division. After the game, they were going to present an Astrodome team of honor, and they brought players back from the various generations, put them on the field, and they gave them some sort of a drawing, a framed drawing, plus a, I can't remember what, but so you had guys from all the different generations standing at their positions, and then you had the current team, you know, Caminiti and Vigio riding around on motorcycles with a bottle of champagne, confetti falling down from the roof, guys smoking cigars. It was the typical celebration, but what added to it was a must-win game on the last day of the season, and it was the last game ever played in the regular season in the Astrodome. I felt like I was walking on air. I was one of the guys they chose to be standing out there. And so, I mean, beyond just being the manager and winning the championship, to have the individual honor and then see the players from the generation, to see, you know, guys from different generations going up and hugging each other and all that. It was just an unbelievable day.
Did you enjoy managing? And I'm sure you, I mean, you bring up some great time. You know, that's a great time. I'm sure you have a ton of great memories. How much of, did you enjoy it, or was it, did it feel like more of a relief every time you won divisions? Because you had a great run.
Yeah, it did, because, when you're managing, all you can do is hope the guys play well. You try to put them in a position where they're likely to succeed, but as we all know, baseball's more about failure than success. So no matter what you do, you know, the guys aren't always going to come through.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like when you're on the mound and you feel like you can force.
You can control it.
You have some control.
Right.
A guy might get an infield hit or a broken bat hit, but if you make good pitches, you got a real good chance to win. And as a manager, you know, you can't go out there and make those pitches or go up there and swing the bat, and so you're helpless in that way. But still, from first pitch to last pitch, I really enjoyed managing, because you have an active role, and more than a coach would in terms of dictating strategy and setting lineups and that sort of thing. And that was great. But there were a lot of things about managing before the game and after the game that were not so much fun. And I would say of all the things I did in baseball, it was by far the most difficult and had more negative aspects to it than pitching or broadcasting. And, you know, most of that, I think, related to pressure. And I think there are managers that just don't feel it. They seem to laugh and cut up. You know, Tommy Lasorda, you know, seemed like the more pressure, the higher profile, the happier he got. But for me, you know, it it weighed on me a little bit.
Yeah. Larry Durker, our guest here, and before we let you go, Larry, I want to ask you, what are you doing personally? I understand that you're working on a musical, if you can kind of work talk about that.
Yeah, that's one thing I'm doing. I started working on a musical that had a baseball theme, and it's turned into more of a story with a little bit of baseball than just a baseball musical, just by the very nature of theater. And I guess the only reason I wasn't afraid to try is because I got to pitch when I was 18 and it worked out, and then I got to broadcast with no experience and it worked out, and then I went down to the dugout to manage with no experience and that worked out, and I thought, well, what the heck, you know, I've got some time here, I'm semi-retired, let me give this a try. And it's in progress. It may get on the stage or it may not, but I think it has some potential.
Well, let us know when it does so we make sure we're the first
all
ones
right.
there.
Yeah. You'll know.
Hey, this has been a thrill for us, you know, all of us here. We appreciate Larry Durker.
You're
coming
doing a good
in.
Job.
Thank you
thank
very,
you.
Very
thank
much.
Thank you very much.
Larry Durker, a Houston legend, a baseball legend.
Absolutely.
How about that? A broadcasting legend. You name it. We appreciate your time, Mr. Durker.
All right,
guys, we're going to go to break. We got one more segment left. You got a chance for the tickets. Larry Durker, thank you very much. You get a chance to give away two tickets to the game. Come to the bus here. Talk to KJ. You got to be wearing an Astro shirt, and you got to say 1560 the game rocks. You got to make sure there's no more echoes. That's all you got to do. Not too hard to do. And if you do that in the next 10 minutes, you'll get yourself two very nice tickets.
I would say that last segment was pretty great.
That was awesome. This, I mean, that is podcast. That's going on the resume.
Yeah.
There.